Welcome to Science Questions. I'm Sherry Quinn.
And I'm Susie Montgomery. This is part three in our series called Adolescent Recovery, It Takes a Community. There is a substance abuse epidemic in the United States, and teenage substance abuse is on the rise. Just over 2 million youth in the U.S., ages 12 to 17, have a substance use disorder. Drug abuse has become the most costly public health problem, and teenagers coming out of the costly rehabilitation programs most often have no choice but to return to the same environment where they were using. According to the Journal of Groups in Addiction and Recovery, for teenagers, school often sits at the heart of the relapse threat. One study found that virtually all adolescents returning to their old school reported being offered drugs on their first day back. In fact, the leading reasons for adolescent recidivism is returning to the environment of previous use. Dr. Lynn Webster, a chronic pain doctor in Salt Lake City.
What I know is that you can't go back into the same environment. You can't go, your chances of success there are too low.
Dr. Webster regularly administers highly addictive pain medication to patients, and sometimes those medications get into the wrong hands. And when it comes to teenagers, Dr. Webster feels a responsibility to these teenage addicts.
We can accomplish a great deal if they are with the compassionate teachers, administrators that understand these are great human beings that just need a different alternative path.
Some states have started recovery high schools in response to this issue, and recovery high schools are proving to be a successful solution. These schools are voluntary, safe, and sober public schools for students recovering from addiction to continue their education. All of the schools are comparatively small, typically in the range of 15 to 60 students. Recovery high schools are scattered across the eastern United States, and the closest one to Utah, and currently the only one in the West, is in Los Angeles, California. Dr. Webster thinks that a recovery school in Salt Lake is needed.
We are at the nursery at Valley High School, an alternative school in a suburb of Salt Lake City that serves non-traditional students, like teen moms. The nursery, though, is just one unique feature of this public high school. Alternative originally meant flexible time schedules, so students could start school later in the day. But now, students attend for a variety of reasons: teen pregnancy, mental illness, substance abuse, and so on. And the school meets the students halfway. Jalar Peacock is a senior at Valley High and finds success there because of their accommodations.
I wasn't able to get out of bed a lot of the time because I can't go from 7 until 2 or 3. So instead, I go from 12:30 until whenever. And it's easier for me to get out of bed and attend school. And the classes and the teachers are fun, so I don't have a problem with it.
Jalar is now attending school regularly and doing well.
I've never succeeded in a normal school before, so I've always failed every single class, but last year I was an honor student.
Unfortunately, though, academic success is not what the school is known for. The school has a stigma attached to it, explains Valley High School teacher Lisa Kolstad.
It can label them, and they know that, I'm in a drug school. And other people, I mean, we've fought that reputation our whole existence, and we're not a drug school. We're a very successful program for kids to not be in a drug school. Our school, for a long time, was known as the druggie school, the pregnant girls and drug abusers. And what we found, we keep a lot of statistics, is the percentage of students that we have who are going through the court system is probably lower than a lot of the boundary schools that we deal with. Quite a bit lower.
So the stigma isn't accurate.
It's not true. No, it's not true. And we were the stepchildren in the basement of the district for a long time, and we liked that. We appreciated that because then they left us alone and we could do what we needed to do with the kids.
And Kolstad says that all of their students have one thing in common.
And that's failure. And failure is a great equalizer because we can start there.
Though there is not a recovery school in Salt Lake City, Valley High, an alternative school, serves a similar student population. The school is the second oldest alternative school in the United States, started in 1975. Unlike recovery schools with regular drug testing and drug counseling, Valley High does not have that infrastructure. However, the very personalized teaching methods and the relationships that form between the teachers and the students are reminiscent of recovery schools. And this school is currently one of the only options for high school dropouts in the Salt Lake Valley. Ethan is a recent graduate from Valley High School in Salt Lake City. He dropped out at Hillcrest High in 10th grade when his 18-year-old brother passed away after a long and painful battle with leukemia. Ethan made a documentary film with Spy Hop Productions called Brother of Mine.
This one time I was helping him up the stairs after we went to the store. And we lived on the third floor, so it was quite a bit of stairs. But like every step he took, it like took so much effort and it just hurt him so bad. And that's when it really, you know, hit me, you know. My brother has a hard time walking upstairs. That's pretty serious.
The film explains Ethan's emotional journey that led to more drug use.
That's what sort of put me in the downward spiral. And, you know, Hillcrest was trying. They put me in, like, the special programs. Group dynamics is what they called it. And they sort of watched me, and they put me in counseling, and they gave me the antidepressants and all of that. But that's not what I needed, and that actually made everything worse. So from there, I sort of dropped out, stopped going, and got into the wrong crowd, let's say, and started doing drugs and everything. And it just made more sense to me to work and do something than go to school and be miserable.
Ethan thought his time was better spent working at a fast food restaurant than attending school. After that, his best friend Nick convinced Ethan to enroll at Valley High. That would make him feel so much better and he would fit in. Hillcrest did not hesitate to let him transfer.
At the time, I had a big blue mohawk and, you know, studded boots, leather jacket. And I go into the administration office because you need a referral to get to Valley. And I say, I'm done here. I want to go to Valley. I need a referral. No questions asked. Just handed me the paper. And apparently, from what I hear from other kids, it's a really hard process to get in there. You need to be credit deficient and all these things. But for whatever reason, they just gave me the paper and said, get out of here. Sort of continued with the drug use, and I was drinking. That's the only way I could get the courage to go to a school. And then this is how I started Valley. And my first couple weeks there, this is where I met Lisa. Saving grace. I love this woman. I show up in her class. I'm a little drunk. I have my mohawk going on, and I write this poem because it's creative writing. And I give it to her, and a couple days later, she's handing this back, and she says, Ethan, this is really good. You're going to be the editor for the Liberator next year, which is their newspaper. And it blew my mind that anyone would put that much credit into me, because, you know, before at Hillcrest, it was nothing. They just saw the mohawk and the boots and whatever.
He had a chance, but when he was a sophomore and sitting in the back of the room with green hair, the teachers didn't want to have anything to do with him. He was one of those kids. But for me, he's one of those kids. It's such an interesting story because he enrolled himself at Valley High School. Didn't tell his father. His parents were divorced because his father was against the idea because there's that reputation and he wouldn't have approved of the school. And he didn't tell his father that he was graduating from Valley High School until a week before he graduated. And his father was stunned but grateful. His mother picked me up and twirled me around.
Lisa brings the students and families some relief and hope, but it's also really fulfilling for her. She sees the person and the potential behind the rebellious outer shell, in part because she was one of those students in the back of a class herself.
I've always loved this population. Even when I was teaching in the boundary schools, I just would gravitate to the kids in the back of the room versus the kids in the front of the room. And
why?
I don't know. I think they were more interesting. I think they needed me more. I think the kids that sit in the front of the room can be on autopilot. And you can say, here's this what you need to do, and they do that. And the kids at the back of the room kind of put an attitude on their face and say, yeah, teach me. And so it's a challenge.
We caught Brittany Flores, another prodigy student of Lisa Kolstad and a recent graduate from Valley High, at her first art show at Ruby Chacon's Mestizo Cafe. Chacon, an artist and co-director of Mestizo Institute of Culture and Arts, hired Brittany originally as an apprentice.
I just saw myself in her a lot, and so I really wanted to hire her. And so she ended up hiring her, and I think it was probably one of the best decisions that I made. She may not know this, and I don't know if I've told her this, but she pushes me to actually think a little bit more outside the box.
And Brittany is now a working artist in the community. And it was Lisa Kolstad who first recognized Brittany's talent and opened up her world to people like Ruby Chacon. Brittany explains, through her experience at a regular high school, how important that one-on-one attention is to education and self-esteem.
When we were in high school, or junior high, we would sit in the back of the class with our sunglasses on, you know, just not even whatever, you know, and then there was the teachers. It was almost like a test for the teachers to see, oh, like, they don't care, you know, so if they just let us sit back there and skip their class, then they didn't really care. And that's what it was. It wasn't just kids that just didn't want to pay attention, but it was kids that actually needed a little bit more than a book.
Valley High teacher Lisa Kolstad.
It's a simple, 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 simple thing, but it has a huge impact. When I pass out papers to my students, I pass out papers to each and every student. I just don't put a pile of papers and they pass them around. I look them in the eye, and I want to get that moment every single day with every student that I have. That's really critical.
This school is one of the only landing places for these kids.
So Valley means a lot to me, you know. I bring it up all the time. Like, I would have never, ever graduated, ever, and I wouldn't be doing this.
Do you really want to make a change, or do you just want to get a cool reputation? Just remember, knowledge leaves an imprint greater than any punch. Reach out and pass it on.
What we heard before that was Ultraviolence by The Oppressed off of the Skinhead Times album. And before that was I Got Your Number by Cox Bar.
After doing a documentary film at Spy Hop, Ethan was hired there as our lab manager and also moonlights at Utah FM Radio, an online radio station. He works out of the basement of a historic building in downtown Salt Lake.
I come in here on Thursday nights and I do a radio show. I play punk music, and that's where we are right now.
Ethan was smoking a cigarette when we met him outside. It is not a fairy tale story. Ethan escaped the cycle of drug abuse, but many of his young friends haven't.
I see a few of them around town, and it kills me because they're all strung out on heroin now, or like homeless, and it really, really hurts me to see that. Like, without using names, one of my friends I grew up with, I ran into him on the train, and I told him what I was doing, and he's like, wow, that's so great. And I asked him, and he's like, doesn't have a job, and he's spanging for change on the train trying to get tar, heroin. And like, I hear from some other people that like he overdosed in their parking lot at this apartment party, and it kills me. And by all means, I could have ended up like that too.
And it all starts in a very naive way.
It started out like most high schoolers. I was drinking beer and smoking pot, and it was a really odd group of kids. They weren't like punk rockers or anything. They were actually like regular suburban rich kids, surprisingly. But once you get into it, you realize those are the kids that have the money to do these things. And that was sort of the downfall. So I got involved with these kids, and we just started smoking pot and more pot. And pot sort of turned into mushrooms, and you know, tried that for a while, and that was weird. I didn't really like that. It didn't make me feel comfortable, and sort of I kept progressing. Mushrooms turned into ecstasy, and we started going to the raves, and that was a chapter. I mean, really scary stuff. This kid we used to hang out with, like 14, 16 pills every weekend, and like at the end of it, he was like having like seizures and stuff, and so I withdrew from that crowd of kids, and just moved to another stimulant, and that was cocaine. And so it started with, you know, just the powder, and the powder turned into crack, unfortunately. So here I am, my brother's dead. I don't know what to do with myself. I'm in 10th grade smoking crack. How that happens, I don't know, but it was horrible, and it gets me here. The thing that killed me is how it made me feel so great, but for only so short. And then you just wanted more and more and more.
I'm living on shady faith, kind of likes to restrict your breath. Never been a better time than this. Suffocate out when you turn a bliss in a city. This wasn't so much shade, you see me rise above and take its place. The heart pumps until it dies. Drain the blood, the heart is wise. All my friends are murdered. Hey, all my bones are buried.
Dr. Glenn Hansen is director of the Utah Addiction Center and professor of toxicology and pharmacology at the University of Utah. He studies the effects of drugs on the brain and behavior.
They're interested in the here and now. How will this make me feel now? And the traditional development in an adolescent is that those areas that are important for decision making do not get fully matured until the mid-20s. So they continue this high degree of impulsivity until they get into that later stage, that 20, 25 years of age. And if you can keep them away from the drugs until then the chances they'll get into trouble with the drugs goes down dramatically.
Early intervention is key. Jim Smith is a licensed clinical social worker here in Salt Lake City and has been doing therapy for 35 years. He started as clinical director at the first Odyssey House here in the city, and then started other residential programs, like Artec and Lifeline. And he describes how addiction is an unintentional consequence.
We all grow up, we all learn that drugs are bad. As children, we all believe in saying no to drugs, and then somewhere along the way, their friends introduce a joint. And you know what? It's not painful. It's really pretty fun. But at home, mom and dad are talking about how terrible drugs are, and now this kid's got a secret, which also feeds into some camaraderie with his friends. And, you know, I don't think I've ever met a young person that woke up one day and said, I think I'll destroy myself.
The use of OxyContin has increased during the last 5 years among 15-year-olds. 1 in 20 high school seniors reported having abused OxyContin, according to the 2009 National Institute of Drug Abuse. And when you are high on these kinds of drugs, life becomes very dangerous.
Because I was on ecstasy and out there was, I thought it was the coolest thing ever. And like, there's everybody's there and everyone's all messed up, happy to see each other, lights. And you know, I went to one a couple months ago sober, and it is the scariest, creepy thing I have ever seen. And I go to some pretty weird shows, you know, in some pretty scary places. And there are, the thing that gets me more than anything are the young kids that are there and that are walking around, and there's creepy guys hiding in the shadows because the lights are dark and there's flashing lights everywhere and it's loud music, and it's really scary. I mean, it's just not a good scene. And because most people that go there are there to be messed up, to be on drugs, to be drunk, whatever. It's just freaky. I could be in prison right now. I could be in jail. Like, by the grace of God, I'm, you know, here doing good.
Do you know anyone who is?
A few of my friends, yeah. Well, I'll stick away from names, but yeah, this kid, he was still involved in it, and he was, I guess, up at a rave up in Ogden and all messed up, and he ended up, like, pretty much raping this young girl, and now he's in jail for God knows how long. I mean, like, I heard that, and I'm like, well, he deserves it for what he did, but I just can't believe it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's horrible. I don't even know what to say.
That is the gruesome reality of this scene of drugs. And Jim Smith has witnessed the rise of teenage drug abuse in Salt Lake City.
Right now, marijuana is on an increase in Salt Lake. Heroin is on an increase. Prescription pills, Oxycontin, Oxycodone, are on an increase. They're available. I have clients that share with me that they can call a beeper and in 30 minutes somebody shows up at a corner in a parking lot. They buy their heroin and away the person goes. I mean, they deliver. Maybe you can get a pizza with it too, I don't know. But back in the 60s and 70s, there was one area in Salt Lake where people sold heroin, which was on West 2nd South and 2nd West, 2nd South. That's no longer the case. Now it's everywhere, and it's everybody. It used to be, years ago, that we could identify what part of the valley a kid was from by the drugs they used. And now they're like garbage pails. I mean, they do everything, anything. So, you know, I don't think we're winning any wars on addiction.
And so what are we going to do to try to win this war? One has to ask how these kids are getting so far gone before anyone notices or tries to help. Teacher Lisa Kolstad.
A lot of these students, one of the threads that follows through is they don't have any responsible, significant adults in their life. A lot of times, the adults in their lives have problems even worse than they do.
And we live in a culture where parents really don't know how to let go. You know, enabling is a destructive behavior, but for parents, it feels like love. It tricks them. In this culture, for a lot of parents, it feels spiritually correct. But it's destructive. They might as well, as cruel as it sounds, take a gun and shoot their son or daughter and kill them quick rather than enable them to death. You know, most of the kids I work with are not going to die in the streets of Salt Lake or Bountiful or Draper. They're going to die in their bedroom. You know, they're going to overdose in their bedroom. And where did the money come to get the drugs? From mom, dad, from the family. I mean, so I think that we've got mom and dad to treat. We've got brothers and sisters. It's the whole system that's sick. And that's what I think programs miss.
It is the whole system. And people committed to addressing this epidemic, like Michael Botticelli, who is the director of the Bureau of Substance Abuse Services at the Massachusetts Department of Public Health, and who is also in recovery himself, is sure of one thing.
Recovery is an incredible challenge for anyone, but I think it's I think it's especially challenging for adolescents because they are so young. And do need one to develop, in essence, a supportive community. And I think that's one of the values of recovery high schools is that they have now a peer group of other students, of other adolescents who are also in recovery. And I think it begins to create kind of a level of normalization around recovery, and particularly when they are in that kind of supportive environment with peers and adults.
The average cost of substance abuse in Utah is $17,000 per person for just medical care, which is over four times what it costs for the average person who isn't fighting addiction. And we are all paying for this, taxing us in more ways than one. In fact, the ubiquity of the problem surfaces in public health, law enforcement, education, families, and on and on. It is going to take a community. It is going to take all of us to understand, first of all, that addiction is not just bad people overindulging, but rather a disease often inherited, and that all of us are susceptible and responsible.
Valley High School graduate Ethan Pollan.
It's broken, and it's not working. I mean, well, our dropout rate's ridiculous.
Chronic pain doctor Lynn Webster.
If we learn about this, if we can understand how we may be contributing to that problem, then maybe we can help solve the problem.
Valley High School teacher Lisa Kolstad.
communication is constant, and that's another one of the keys is being able to talk and having those lines open.
Social worker Jim Smith.
It's been my experience with youth that, or actually with everyone, that for most of us, our first hero in life is a school teacher. I find that to be just common with people, that the first person they can remember, whether it's third grade, 10th grade, someone believed in me. It's usually a teacher.
And, you know, really, it was just that one grown adult putting worth into me that totally flipped my script.
Don't think there's a one size fits all. I think we've got to be really diverse in our alternatives.
Massachusetts Recovery Principal Michelle Lipinski.
When I started this high school, I thought everybody wanted to come in and be sober and yay, sing kumbaya and get all better. And as I've turned to find out, addiction just in adolescence typically doesn't look like that, where students get better and then that's it, and then they're better for the rest of their lives. There's slips and falls, and we need to be there for them and kind of root them through that and figure out what they need.
Massachusetts State Senator Stephen Tolman.
We see different successes in different schools, but the one common factor is with the proper education, we're taking a young group that may have been addicted and sick to a large part of their life, and many of them are going on to college, and many of them are successful individuals and self-producing, and they're not reliant on the public assistance. It's the best bang for the buck.
Scientist Dr. Glenn Hansen.
One of the best predictors of whether someone's going to get into trouble with drugs is literacy. And that's not just can you read. It's can you read, can you understand, and can you use what you read? And that's all about stimulating and developing brain and cognitive function. So kids that do that, they are much less likely to have drug abuse problems later on in their life. And that's, the school does that for us.
It feels so much better to work hard and not be on drugs. And the feeling you get from actually accomplishing something is such a big high, better than, you know, any drug could ever give you. And that whole mentality of you can do things on your own if you really try, it really stands out in the music to me, and that's what I did. I'm like, I'm going to do this on my own. I have a goal. I'm going to pursue it and run with it, because it's really surprising what anyone can accomplish if they put their mind to it.
It is going to take teachers, doctors, science researchers, teenagers, parents, policymakers, the whole community all working together, or this problem is not going to go away.
Thanks for listening. Science Questions is produced by Sherry Quinn
and Susie Montgomery.
And special thanks to Ethan Pollan for the music selections.
Support for Access Utah comes from Crumb Brothers Artisan Bread at 300 South and 300 West in Logan. Now open Monday through Saturday until 2, offering a changing menu of a specialty salad, French breakfast pastries with local seasonal fruits, and lunch sandwiches.
Access Utah is a production of Utah Public Radio. You can listen to this episode or previous episodes of Access Utah anytime at upr.org, where you can find a link to subscribe to our podcast. This is Utah Public Radio, KUSR HD1 89.5 Logan, KUSK HD1 88.5 Vernal, KUSL HD1 89.3 Richfield, KUST HD1 88.7 Moab, and KUSU FM HD1 91.5 Logan.